With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another episode of the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international Johnny Beattie, former France hooker Benjamin Kayser, and a very special guest today. We've got one of the stars of the current France team that's getting so many plaudits at the moment, so we'll get him on very shortly. But how's your week been, guys?
First day of lockdown, okay? So we've been preparing for it psychologically, financially, and so in terms of work. What do you want to say? We got to stay strong. It's bigger than us. Stick together. But it's another big hit on the chin. Not being able to travel, to see my parents, you know, thinking about Christmas. Are we going to be able to do stuff? Blah, blah, blah. So that's all the dark. The good side is that on Monday, they started fitting my kitchen. So we got almost a kitchen. And then they opened the boxes and cupboards that were meant to be 900 were 800. So basically the first hour was extraordinary. The second hour was back to distress because we had to send them back and get them changed and all that. But other than that, all good. And I commentated Wales Scotland from the Stade de France in a studio. So explain that one to me. But oh well, that's what I did.
And Johnny, you're a dab hand at the lockdown now, so you've been doing it for a while.
I can't remember last time I was unlocked. No, mate, we're now used to it. We've been locked down again for a week. Obviously, the positive is it's a lockdown light this time, so the kids are at school, which is an absolute lifesaver, which means we can get on during the day and paperwork, admin, boring stuff. Following the US election, which is highly entertaining at the minute, which has been good fun, so watching that unfold. Apart from that, again, like Benji, waiting for Autumn Nations Cup to kick off, waiting to get out and commentate, get out of the house and get working. But no, honestly, we're used to it now. We just don't know how long this one's going to last. But hopefully things will cool down for Christmas and we can do a bit of something with someone and hopefully with the latest addition to the family.
Yeah, the American election's definitely giving the French rugby politics a run for the money.
It's unbelievable.
He's a different level. I would love to see him just dropping at a table of a conversation between the league and the federation. He'd probably take one side, just stir things up, and then go to the other side and stir things up again. That would be absolute classy entertainment, I'm telling you.
Well, we'll chat about the France game in more detail later on, but our guest was front and centre in another impressive France performance last weekend, so we'll get him on right now to have a chat about it. It's Racing and France second row. Bernard Leroux, how are you?
Fine, thank you, yourself. Thanks for having me.
So talk to us then, how was the game against Ireland from your perspective? Did it all go according to the game plan?
Yeah, obviously we wanted to win with a bit more points. That would have been great, but I'm happy with the win. Happy with the Six Nations performance overall. I think we did pretty well, so except for the game, for the bonus points we lost against England, or the one they got at the end. And then obviously the Scotland game, where I think we lost a bit of focus there the week before lockdown and all the rumours going on. And yeah, but happy with the overall performance.
You mentioned the tries and the points that you knew when you kicked off that you needed to get against Ireland. How much was that spoken about in the build-up? What was the mindset? Did you go out there knowing you wanted to score all these points and tries, or was it more about the win first?
Obviously, it was Ireland's a big game. Scoring 30 points against Ireland is massive. So we went out knowing we had to score 31 or over 30 points to win the Six Nations. But our first goal was just to win the game. Fabian Galte came to see us before the game. He said, listen, this is the situation. We need this to win. But first of all, we would just like to win. We've only won them once in the last 9 years. So that was really important to get a good win against Ireland.
I've never beat them, period. Ever.
My first time as well.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's important to put things in perspective. So if I don't get it wrong, Bernie, you rocked up, what, in 2013, right? Was it New Zealand tour? Was that your first tour, your first captain?
That was my first tour, yeah.
So Bernie basically he went through all the shit of the French rugby, you know, for a while. Everything that we've been speaking about in this show, just to sum it up, Bernie, you know, because everybody asked me, so what's going on with French rugby? Why? Just explain to us, you know? So he's lived from the inside, the ups and downs, the Saint-André, the Guinness, the whatever. So now finally get a Six Nations where people are smiling, are happy, and with some wins. Of course, it's a bloody amazing performance. Of course, all you can ask for them is first beat Ireland, then we will speak about bonus points and about this and that. But it's always press pause and realize where we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, wherever, where we've been with our heads down. And in April, no, in February, we're all hyped up. Let's go for Six Nations. And by May, we're trying to hide somewhere because we're so ashamed. So Bernie's done that. And I think he's that link of generation to basically tell the young folks, the Dupont, the Entamac, and all these guys who don't have the weight of the past on their shoulders, just realize where we come from. Realize, you know, where the crowd has seen us for years and years and years. So that's why I was genuinely chuffed for all you boys that been through all the shit to get this. You're absolutely dead right. Get the win and concentrate on us. And then obviously because of point difference, you guys still beat the champion. So for me, that counts.
It was quite surprising to see the guys' reaction after the game. Like, no one celebrated. No one was really happy because obviously we wanted to win the Six Nations. Like, coming off the field, the coaches told us, listen, you guys smile. We just beat Ireland. Scored over 30 points against Ireland. So the boys wasn't happy after the game. Obviously, we wanted to win the Six Nations, but I think we had a good campaign.
Get Guillaume Girado to come and do a speech, man.
He would have been,
he would have been so happy. You're kidding me.
You're talking about that, about the early years. I watched the interview with Scott Spedding the other night and I was just laughing for half an hour while he was going through all this.
And talk to us about Ireland then, because the game itself, obviously, you guys were very impressive, but you mentioned the recent record. So what's it like facing Ireland? Because there's lots of talk in the media over here at the moment about how they're very predictable, but clearly they've been predictably good over the past sort of 9 or 10 years. So what's it like facing them?
Ireland's definitely one of the teams we look up to, and they've got a great kicking game. They're really structured, and they've got great individual players as well, especially with Johnny Sexton controlling it so well. And yeah, they were ranked number one in not long ago, like 2 years ago, they were number one in the world. So yeah, just a great team to play. It's definitely the most physical game I've had in the Six Nations. It was so brutal. The scrums, I don't know if you saw the scrums. It was 20-second long scrums. No one was going forward. It was the most tiring and physical game definitely that I've played in the Six Nations. I'm just glad we've got good players and we rounded off pretty well. We only had like 40% ball position, but I think we did really well in our kicking game as well. That's a sector we worked on so hard for this last year. We sort of realized you have to have a good kicking game where before we just kicked when we were under pressure. Now we try to find space and use kicking as a way of attack. And that's the one thing about Ireland. Now we know they've got a game plan. As soon as you get them out of the game plan, they get a bit of loss sometimes. That was the main goal for the game. Just try to sort of ruin the game plan, have a good kicking game and just play with the players we've got with the individual skill and stuff.
I'm not surprised you're tired, mate. I saw this morning you were the tournament's top tackler. You weighed in with 87, so well done. Not bad at all. And I want to go back to generally, in terms of the group and the feeling, like, you know, we just had a laugh, but obviously Girado and Poirot and guys have held their hands up and said, look, I've had enough. I want to retire. Age 27, 28, you know, young guys saying they've had enough. You've been through the hard period. You now look like you're on course with great talent, with good coaches in place, you rocking it in the second row. How good does it feel to be part of a French side that is up here and operating at a high level?
Yeah, just to get back to that, I told my missus I would retire after, because I had a tough run with Guy Nervais, and after that, I was a bit in a bad mental space as well. So I told my missus, listen, I'll retire after the World Cup. And then going into the World Cup, I saw this young group coming through and the great players you've got. Fabian's absolutely brilliant in what he does. And we had a speak with my missus, and I told them, listen, I need to continue. I think this group's going to win something. So much talent coming through. And I think French rugby is actually going to win something in the next 4 years. So I'm going to stick in here and see how long I can still go. But it's, yeah, the vibe in the team is unbelievable. It's a young group. It's a new generation. Things are going well. I think the way they treat us in the French camp is different as well. We've got a lot more freedom as well to do stuff we want to do, to speak up, to say what we want to do. And we've got the talent as well. We've got good 9-10s. I think we've got a good team that's actually complementary to each other. So, we've got good ball carriers, good 9-10, good walkers, horses like they call us. And we've got a good balance in the team that's doing really well. We work tremendous. I've never, ever trained like that. Fabian is, it's all about high intensity and big trainings. But afterwards, it's like after every game, we get on the beers and we have a good time as well. So, it's just heaps of fun. It's the first time in since I've been in the 7 years that it's just fun. I enjoy being there. It's actually better than being at the club at this moment. So that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing to hear, mate. Can you give us like a little insight, to be honest, on appointing the new captain? So Charles Olivon, we saw him coming through the ranks. You and I, always a charismatic, very good player with a lot of charisma, a lot of self-belief, and obviously very good. But there was big boots to fill, right? You know, a lack of experience, and on top of that, being captain at the same time is a bit all thing. I have to say, I think he blew my mind away during the Six Nations, because I thought not only was he very good as a captain, he gave that aura and he represented that feeling, like you said. Boys look like they're happy.
Yeah,
like they're happy. They genuinely like each other, and there's this good melting between each other. And on top of that, he delivered some top performance. So, what do you think about his leadership and stuff?
Oh, he's a great captain. I think it's a tough role to take after Thierry Duchatois and Guillaume that had to give the losing speech after every game. I think that's not a role I would have liked to have. So, he just beats up, and his story. He's got a nice rugby story. He's almost having a career-ending injury, coming back, becoming French captain, and he's. You can see he's really enjoying it. And what I think he does great, he sort of shares the captain role. There's a few leaders in the team, and he doesn't take everything on himself. He gets guys in, and he attracts a lot of guys that invest in the captaincy role. So yeah, it's great, and he's doing brilliant. He's really a good captain. He's not. He talks when he needs to talk. He doesn't talk all the time. He doesn't talk too much. He just says things at the right time. And I'm so proud of him. He's doing great as a captain.
You mentioned Fabian and how good he's been. We've spoken about him quite a lot on the show. Benji obviously knows him well. There were some question marks at club level. He seems to be doing incredibly well at international level. And Benji said, I think that's where he fits. So just talk to us about not just his coaching, where obviously he's a brilliant coach, but his manner management as well of players off the pitch. How have you found that?
I think what they did really well is they handpicked all the staff. And yeah, I wouldn't like to work with Fabian for 11 months. It's so intense, man. Like when we get to French camp, everything training wise, it's so intense, but he's brilliant for this short burst of time, like 2-3 months during the World Cup, now during Six Nations. He's absolutely so good rugby wise. Now, I think what they did well, they brought in Rafael
Ibanez.
And he's sort of looking after the players and just the human side of the team. So he's organizing outings, everything to do with media. So Fabian's just concentrating on rugby, where he's great, and we've got great fitness conditioning coaches. Where I feel like in the past, for the first 5 years I was a friend, we were always chasing what the All Blacks was doing or what England was doing, and we're comparing stats. And it's the first time I actually feel we're almost seeing how can we get ahead of them? How can we just... We're at the next level. So we're not chasing other teams anymore. I feel we're taking the players we've got, we see where our strong points is, what the team's doing great, and we're working towards that and doing things that suits us, not chasing other teams and other stats. So that's, I think, a big difference.
That's awesome. And a guy that obviously will add to that massively, and somebody that you've clearly bought into with your defensive effort, is Sean Edwards, who we've spoken about a lot as well. He's an amazing character. But how has he fitted in? Obviously, he's revolutionized your defensive systems, the way you are as a team. You look so much more coherent defensively. But how is he getting on? How's his French? And what kind of impact has he had on you as a group?
Listen, first of all, I always said I've never get into coaching because I never had a passion for coaching until I saw Sean Edwards. And I got home one day and I told my missus, I said, listen, I'm going to do what this guy's doing. He's brilliant. He's extraordinary. The way he works the players, he always looks like he's angry when he's on the job. He's just so on it. And technically, he's changed the whole mindset about contesting and tackling and small techniques. He does small drills. It never lasts more than 5 minutes in training. So he'd have us three times during a training for 5 minutes. And it would be at 100%. And he's just so effective. His video session is like 30 seconds long. And he shows two images and he said, look at this. This is shit. And then he shows another image. Look at this. This is good. This is what we need to do. Go. So he's so effective, short, intense, and great bloke. And he's great on the beers after the game as well, mate. So he's just a good, he's a good team guy. And yeah, he's settling in well. He's made a massive effort with French as well. He's speaking, he's doing his video sessions in French. It's short and sharp, but he's getting there. And he told me he's doing a lot of French course in his room online. So yeah, he's settling in nice.
He just shouts, placage, placage.
Fucking placage.
Most of them, placage. Oh, fucking hell, man. Fucking hell. Yeah, he's such a good bloke. He's really good for the team.
And mate, you were a little bit naughty. We can't skip over it. but you nearly missed that game against Ireland with a little bit of naughtiness against Wales and our old mate Alan Wynne-Jones. So I just wanted to ask you briefly, I thought during the game you were lucky to get away with it. How did you feel once you got sighted? Because normally once you get sighted, something's going to happen. So how relieved were you and how fortunate did you feel to get lucky and get off with your crimes?
I didn't even really notice it happened during the game. Only after the game when I saw the videos that I thought, this looks bad. So I was very stressed. I didn't sleep for 2 days. I was thinking, I'm going to have another ban because I've got quite a history with tackling and rucking and obviously being that's sort of my job, the physicality part of the game. Yeah, so super stressed off the game. It was really accidental, although a lot of people don't think about it. At least there weren't the scrabble on the ground after the tackle. I don't know if you've seen the image, but I fall with my left hand in a really awkward position. So my shoulder sort of bent behind my back and I was really looking to go to ground with my forearm. And my arm just sort of slid over his face. I don't know, it looked really bad. It looked horrible, but honestly, it was accidental.
I'm buying this. It was a complete accident.
I would have loved to see the face of your lawyer when you try to explain that one.
Yeah.
I would have been hiding under the table, mate, with like sweat drops.
I was. Yeah, it's pretty embarrassing and you feel bad about it.
Rugby's rugby, Bernie. You're here to smash people. It's a contest. Yeah. I don't think Alwyn Jones took offense at all, okay? No. Rugby is a battle. Rugby is a physical side.
Yeah.
I think that last elbow was too much and you were lucky. But if you got away, then fair play. Who gives a shit?
It was the finisher.
Go on. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Then go on to win things. Learn from that and then do it again. Just not that last elbow. That's it.
Yeah. It was an accident. We've heard it.
It was accidental. It was really accidental, even though you guys don't think so. Yeah, I'm just glad I got off there and
good.
I'm on for the rest of the year.
Too, mate.
Moving forwards now, looking ahead. So Autumn Nations Cup, we know we've spoken loads on here about what's been going on behind the scenes between the FFR and the LNR. I suppose give us an insight into how that's been for you guys being kind of in the middle of it, first of all, but also then moving ahead, do you know what games you're going to be involved in? Do you know how much you're going to be involved in?
Yeah, so we've only got one game left and they already chose the game against the team for the Fiji team, for the Fiji game. So we're probably going to play Fiji if they don't have too much COVID positive tests. I don't know if you guys saw, but they've got a few players test positive. So yeah, then we're back at the club. So we've got one game left and then obviously turnaround. I think for us, it's a bit disruptive always having this thing in between the FFR and the LNR. Everyone's financially in trouble and we understand that side as well, but it's a really difficult situation for us. We had meetings with Pro Bowl just before, and they explained to us, listen, so what can actually happen if you refuse selection? You can get suspended, you can have financial penalties, and then if you refuse the club, so you can have financial penalties as well. So we were sitting there in the middle like, okay, so what do we do? Do we send out to the club? Do we send out to the federation? And they didn't have solutions. Like, they were just telling us, listen, you can get penalties for doing this or penalties for doing that. We were sitting in the middle like, and we had meetings like, just can you just tell us what to do so we can make a collective decision and just all do the same thing? Because we don't want to have problems with our clubs. Obviously, that's where we make most of our living. So, and that's we got to the French team because of our club. So yeah, it was really difficult and tough, but that's done and behind us now. We've played our three games and that's the choices that's been made. And I think it's good for the other players to get a chance as well to play in a competition and maybe get some depth.
Who are you looking forward to seeing coming through, mate? Because obviously, you know, Fabian's stuck with this team and he's sort of stuck to his guns with the same selection through the Six Nations and the first game of the Autumn Nations Cup. But of the guys you've been training with that we maybe haven't seen that much of, but you've obviously played against in the top 14, who are you looking forward to seeing coming through and getting capped or getting more experience?
I don't really know who's going to pick, but yeah, just getting depth. We've got such good flyers and scrum offs. I think Baptiste Seren is definitely get him to play 80 minutes because playing over 4 years you're going to have injuries and that's key position. So I would just say, changing the flyer from the scrum offs and getting other guys to run the game and get a bit of experience. Because Fabian sort of told us, listen, he's going to stick to the same team. Even if you have to have a few bad, you're going to play yourself out of the team, but he's going to try to stick with the team and grow this team to the next World Cup, which I think is a great thing because French rugby has chopped and changed so much over the last 5 or 6 years. So, yeah, I just think getting depth, maybe getting a different captain in as well, giving someone else that captaincy role. But, yeah, I would say key positions is 9 and 10. And then, obviously, locks. I would love seeing Fabian Sankoni coming in at lock. Maybe he's a third row, but I think he's got the same
profile. You're just saying that you want 10 locks to come in so you can go back and play 6 or 7. That's it. That's the only reason. No, but out of seriousness, I know. So Bernie and I shared a summer tour in New Zealand, 3 times New Zealand in a row in 2013, and that's when he started really hitting, playing at 7 and stuff. So your commitment on the field has never been even a question. It was a matter of, can you be more effective international level as a lock, or could you play both and this and that? But it's actually so good to have somebody so mobile who can still do all the graft in the lock. That's why I think that they pushed you basically to go there. And I know at first you were a little bit reluctant because obviously it's not your absolute pride from the start. But now, do you enjoy it now?
I do enjoy it. I made a mental shift. I always told myself I won't move to lock before 30 years. So I just hit 30 last year. And
so you look 50. So you're okay.
I might have 5 or 6 extra years if I move to lock. Then just wrapping my head around modern locks, being more mobile and sort of doing the same thing as a third row. And that's where the French team were heading as well, having a mobile team that can still be physical. So I definitely think that's going to be the profile in the next few years for the French locks as well. So I think you'll see a lot more bigger loose forwards moving to lock and being picked in that position in the French team as well. That's why I said Fabian Sacconi, I think he's great to replace someone like me at 4. We'll have bigger 5 locks. But at 4, we would like more. I think that's what they would like, more mobile locks, yeah.
And how did that move into the second row come about? Did someone pull you to one side and have a chat and say, this is where we think, or was it just natural? Someone said, you're playing there, do it.
They've always sort of, when we had problems and stuff, I was a big loose forward and they'd always say, listen, Bernie, would you mind shifting to lock for this big game? I played the 2016 European Cup final and the top 14 final at lock as well because we had a lot of injuries at lock. So I've played that role, but I was never comfortable there. I like to be in first contact. I love contact. That's what I'm good at. Like I've played 43 tests and I've never scored a try. So I really like the physicality part of the game. That's what I enjoy doing. So being a loosey and getting to the first breakdown and just the first tackling and. It's obviously what I lock, but I try to do the same thing on lock now, and I guess that's where the team needs me, so I'll stick in there for as long as I can.
I thought the lack of tries was just you had so many assists, just because you're always setting other people up.
I wish, man.
Well, let's go back to when you moved over to France now, just stepping back in time a little bit, because we've spoken to quite a lot of guys on here about what the adjustment is like. So when you first came over, first of all, you were very close to signing a contract. I read somewhere that it might have been the next day you were due to sign for Jake White and the Lions. So talk to us about how the move to Racing short term initially, how that came about and just how you found it moving to France.
Yeah, so I was actually with the Springbok Sevens on camp and I was supposed to sign with the Lions. And then I had a three month break. It was September 2009. So I had a 3 month break before Super Rugby started. And my agent came to me and he said, listen, there's this French team that's injured. Would you like to go over for 3 months as a medical joker? So I was from a small farm town in South Africa. Been to Europe once. I played in Amsterdam for 2 months. So, yeah, coming to France was a big shift for me. But I thought it's a good experience getting out there for 3 months, just playing a bit. Then I arrived here with 100 euros in my pocket. My mom gave me 100 euros, 19 years old, got to the airport and they sent me a text and they told me, just grab a taxi or a train. So I've never, ever been on a taxi or a train. I'm from a small town in South Africa. I'm like, I don't even know how this works. And the taxi cost me 97 euros to get to the hotel. I was left with 3 euros, man. 3 euros.
What did you buy with the 3 euros? Is it a coffee or a beer?
No, at least I had a bank card as well, but yeah, my cash was gone. And then I picked up Racing and I didn't even know who played for Racing. I was just I never watched top 14 as a kid. Watched Super Rugby growing up in South Africa, and got here and there was Sebastian Jabal, Francois Steyn, Andrew Mertens, just some really big players. And I was, it was just so much fun and learning from the. And it's, I think it's easier if you walk into a team like that, just taking a bit of all that great players and trying to copy what they're doing. And so I just sort of evolved fast then. And they, the year after that, they asked me if they can sign me for 3 more years. So I just thought, I thought, okay, might as well stay and make the most of it. And 10 years later, I'm still here, enjoying it, loving it.
Mate, that's ridiculous. So the first part of what you said there was you've gone from playing Springbok Sevens to second row for the French national team. That's amazing.
Yeah, I actually never played for the Springbok Sevens. I was just in training camp. And I played a few friendlies and stuff. I was with them for 4 months. But yeah, just coming up as an academy player in South Africa and then ending up in France for 3 months then and staying 10 years.
And obviously, so growing up as a young kid, you obviously dreamt of playing for the Springbok. As anyone does growing up in South Africa, you want to play Springboks. At what stage in your career, you signed for 3 more years and you were then within the French system. At what stage did you start to realise, I think I've got a real shot of playing for this French side, and that Springbok dream kind of fading away?
First of all, growing up as a kid, I was quite a big swimmer. I was swimming up until the age of 17, 18, and then I was playing for my school's first rugby team. And I didn't even want to play rugby. I didn't thought I was that good. And this guy, Alan Zondag, his son actually coaches Toulouse now. He came to me and he told me, listen, I think you can be a good rugby player. And I thought, no, man, I'm from a small school. The only reason I'm good is because I play with a school with 300 boys in. So I can't even compete with the big schools. I've never played big stage rugby. And so I wanted to go study marine biologist, to become a marine biologist. And so that rugby dream, always enjoyed playing at club rugby, having a few beers. And then this guy pitched up and I went to his academy for a year, and then things just started happening, and I enjoyed the journey. But I never thought I was going to play for the Springboks or play international rugby or even play professional. So things happened pretty fast, and arriving in France, obviously arriving and racing, there's so many different nationalities. I think one of the reasons I did well was because I felt like I represented South Africa in a way in the start. Like, everyone had this vision of South Africans being hard and tough and tackling and being big boys. So I thought, I have to live up to this sort of stigma that's built around South African rugby players. And I just tried to harden up and be at that level. And yeah, that things just started happening. And after, I think it was 2012 when Philippe Andre came to see me the first time, just before Six Nations, and said, listen, would you be interested in getting picked for the French team? And I was at the end of my contract as well with racing that year. And Heineken Meyer came to see me just before he became Springbok coach. And he told me, come back to the Bulls. I promise you, within 3 months, you'd be up for selection for the Springboks. And then I just decided, no, I'm going to stay. I really like France. I've just started learning the language. I really enjoy the culture. I enjoy the boys. I enjoy the just being outside of South Africa and experience something new. So that's why I made my choice to sort of stay in France and give playing for the French team a go. And that worked out pretty well, and I really enjoy it. I'm still happy with my choice today.
Bernie, you mentioned Philippe Saint-André coming up and seeing you and stuff. So Philippe Saint-André was the first one who picked Rory Cocott, who picked Noah Nakatasi, who picked Bernie, who picked Daniel Cotte, a tight end prop who plays in Castres. And every single time there was a foreigner picked, it was a big deal in French press. It was, another foreigner and this and that, and he's cutting corners. And all of a sudden, for the last 6 months, we've never heard a problem with a foreigner. We've never put a problem with Paul Willems has been smoking it. Nobody says anything. Virimi Vakatawa was born in Paris all of a sudden. And you're born and bred here. So there's clearly also something that, and I include myself in it, that the old French team did wrong in terms of welcoming foreign players into the team. If you got picked, you never stole the jersey off anyone. You got called to come here. You didn't ask for it. And then you did your hardest. Probably the only one was Winnie Antonio, the massive prop from La Rochelle, but because he was so fluent and so easy to socialize with, that they did well. So my first question is, do you think there's a different way that foreigners are welcomed into the French team, and what is it they're doing best? And the second is, if you could sort of, I don't know if in England people saw that, but you guys did a remise des maillots, a handing out jersey before the game against Ireland, which I thought, honestly, because I was working for French TV, I saw the whole thing, was absolutely beautiful. What they did is, under the numbers of each players on the jerseys, they wrote the clubs where they were from. And all of a sudden, it's meant to be sort of a jersey thing. Galtier spoke about his dad. He was in tears. Virimi Vakatawa just looked at the jersey and saw the tiny little club from Fiji where he was from and couldn't say a word and almost shed into tears as well. Bernie had something hilarious to say that I'll let you comment after because I thought it was very funny. And all the boys, it was just the proud of where you're from and that thing. So is that one of the reasons why all the foreigners are so more foreigners or new French, if you want to say whatever, are so more welcomed and how?
I think the group's really easy on where before you sort of felt like an outsider. It's now a lot more, I guess, welcoming. It is definitely the thing is we're all fluent in French right now, so we communicate. I remember playing my first test. I needed to do the. I wasn't speaking French that well at the time, and I was literally sleeping on Google Translate trying to get phrases for the next day's media. And so I think, yeah, I was stressed out in the beginning and it was, you sort of didn't feel that comfortable. Where now is everyone that's there's been there for a while, we all speak good French and we're good mates, the coaches. And I think the thing that Banner put in place, you have to be a 5 year and have a French passport and have French nationality. That's also a big thing. So we sort of, it's a big thing. You didn't just become French. You chose to become French. You chose to apply for that passport and become part of the culture and the country. So I think there's a bit of extra respect for in that as well. But yeah, it's so welcoming. And the team, it's all about rugby now. It's rugby having a good time, rugby with, and the respect within rugby, all the, yeah, the whole stigma around it is great. It's not as stressful as it was before to be a foreigner in the French team.
Well done. And talk to us about that jersey ceremony then. What did you say?
I just told where I'm from and obviously what we did. It's hilarious for the guys if you tell them you played barefoot rugby until the age of 13 years old, because kids in South Africa can't afford boots. They grow at an immense pace at that age. So you play barefoot until the age of 13 years old. And when I turned 14, my mom bought me my first pair of boots, but it was like three sizes too big. So I had to play with it for the next 4 years. I was running like McDonald's up there with my shoes that was too big. And but I've always enjoyed being around the amateur rugby clubs and the whole vibe around there. That's still my favorite memory of rugby. Although I've had quite a few good memories, that amateur rugby and just your own club, that stays special.
And all this talk about foreign-born players and foreigners in the French team, am I right in saying your ancestors are from Normandy? So you're French, aren't you?
Yeah. I think Benji, it was a bit easier for me as my name's Bernard Leroux. I think everyone didn't realize, like Rory Cock and those guys, it's pretty, or Van der Merwe or whatever, that's pretty South African name, but they didn't realize when they read in the newspaper, Bernard Leroux, it's a French name. So I don't think I felt as much pressure as the rest.
Bernie the Ginger. That's what it means. Bernie the Ginger.
Exactly.
And so going back to that time again, when you moved over, so lots of people have spoken about how different it is in France. You're clearly one of the perfect examples of how much you've taken to life in France and you love it and you've stayed. Talk to us about the coaching. So back in South Africa, compared to when you moved over to France, what are the kind of differences in coaching?
I think arriving here, the first thing I realized, it was a lot more emotional. They were playing so much emotions. Like, coaching is one thing, 80% emotions, 20% coaching. So it was all about psyching up the team to getting ready for the weekends. There's 36 games a year or whatever. So just getting everyone amped to play the weekend. I still remember my first game. I'm used to sitting in the corner and having a little prayer and being pretty relaxed before the game. And Sebastian Sobol woke up. He walked up to me. And he sort of pulled me. He's like, Bernie, are you ready for the game? I was looking at this big guy with a beard. I'm like, yeah. I'm okay. So, but the coaching is different. We always had a few international coaches in the beginning with Simon Mannix and a lot of foreigners involved as well. So, yeah, it was just interesting for me to learn from, not just from the coaches, but the players as well. I think it's great for a young player to come to a club with a lot of different cultures and techniques and different ways of doing things and mixing that, trying to mix that up it's a privilege to have as a young player.
And have you seen that improve quite a lot? Because obviously during your entire time in France, there's been lots of, you know, New Zealand-based coaches, South Africans come into the top 14 and coach. And now you're working with Fabien Galtier, with Sean Edwards. So whether it's at wrestling, whether it's with France, have you seen the coaching improve a lot over that period?
Oh, definitely. The coaching and the level of the top 14 has improved immensely. If I compare it to 10 years ago, you can't even compare. It's not the same game. Coaching and style of playing has changed so much. And I guess that's with a lot of foreigners coming in. I think France is opening up to more foreigners as well. But the French coach has also improved massively. I mean, we've got Laurent Travers and Laurent Labitte that was with us. Technically, they were so good. They were probably the best coaches I've ever had. And so, yeah, everyone, coaching has definitely gone a lot bigger and better in France over the last few years.
And Racing have obviously been on a massive journey as well since you started to wear that. Now, you've won titles, not quite clinched that European crown. Like, we saw the disappointment, obviously, at the end of the game. A big win for them backing up and going to Stade Francais and winning, but how close now with the progression that you've seen and the team that's evolved over the next few years or next that has evolved over the past 4 or 5 years, do you think that was your moment, your best chance to win this year, or do you still think you've got a chance moving forward?
Yeah, I went to see Juan Imhoff before the game and I told him, listen, if we don't win it this year, I really hope we get to win it next year, because I don't know how long this team, we've got a few players, I think, that's peaking at the moment. They will peak over the next 2 or 3 years. Finn Russell's in great form. Jeremy's in excellent form. We've got a good back of forwards. So hopefully in this next year or two, we can have another shot at it. I feel like our team, our senior players, is peaking at the moment. And we've got great form. We've got loads of internationals. But yeah, it was a really tough loss for us. Third European Cup. I think the first one we deserved to lose against Saracens, that was great. The second one was really physical, and this one we were really well prepared for. We didn't start off the game really well, so yeah. But I'm really gutted about that loss. It was tough for the team. I was sort of happy to go with the French team straight away the week after, just to get my mind elsewhere, because that was really one of my goals this year. 20 European Cup. We've won a top 14. I would really like to win another top 14, but European Cup's up there. It's one of the great titles to have, and hopefully we get another shot at it in the next few years. We'll definitely be going harder. That's our club's main goal at the moment, to get a star on the jersey.
Don't feel too bad, mate. Some guys have gone through a whole career without ever winning a Champions Cup, huh? And winning a lot of finals. So it doesn't take anything away from the quality of the team, the quality of the players, your resilience, whatever. It's just shit happens. High competition.
Yeah, that's true. Benji, you know all about losing finals. I mean, you've been exactly.
You said it.
It is. Yeah, it's tough, especially the few weeks following. It's mentally, it's tough getting up for the games often, knowing you have to start over, doing all that work and having all that ambition to go there. But yeah, that's part of the game. Happy to be there. Hopefully, I don't get another silver medal, and hopefully, the next one's gold.
I wanted to ask you about the final moments in that game, Bernie. Like, we saw the camera pan to you and your reaction as that turnover was won by Exeter on the try line. And obviously the disappointment on the bench, you were front and centre and obviously devastated. Was there a call on the field for a drop goal? Have you got that in your armoury at Racing? That was the one thing I wanted to ask. Was there a call on the field at that time? Was that the disappointment we saw on the bench, or was it just something that didn't happen? What exactly happened?
I don't know if the moment was a bit too big, but we actually trained it. We had a few phases under the post. We've trained it in the week that we would go to a drop goal. I don't know why it wasn't called. We were screaming from the bench, take the 3 points and drop goal, and it didn't happen on the field. So, yeah, it's just one of those moments you regret. The option was there. We did train it in the week. For that game, you always train that situation. So having a drop goal or playing extra time, or you play all the situations, having a red card. So we did train it. And obviously, we didn't go to that option, and yeah, so it's devastating, but that's part of it. It's a team sport, so we'll take it on the chin and move on to the next one.
Next year, mate. Next year's your
hopefully.
And you mentioned how good Laurent is, and how difficult it is, obviously, after losing a final like that. Just give us an insight into what he said afterwards, and how he's kind of, I know you left and you went up and joined up with France, but how has he kind of lifted the spirits after that?
Yeah, so after the game, no one talked. Everyone was devastating. They said they'll leave it to the analysts. We had options to score, we had options to win this game, and everyone was devastated. So no one spoke to me, not even the president spoke too much. I think everyone was just really sad for the club and the moment that we let past. Afterwards, apparently we had this Paris derby, which is also really important for the club and all the Parisian sponsors and stuff. So there was a big aim to get out top. I think the following week we struggled a bit mentally. That Stade Francais game, we sort of wanted to prove ourselves right, win a game, and just move on. But I think it is tough on the team mentally, staying motivated. And I think until the next European Cup starts, we'll have to work on our mental side of the game, just to be up there every weekend and go out after that.
Well, luckily you don't have long to wait. It's only a few weeks away, and then we're back into it. So it's crazy at the moment. Just a guy you mentioned there, Finn Russell, just give us an insight into what it's like to play alongside him. I mean, do you know what he's going to do from 1 minute to the next?
Oh, we've got absolutely no idea, man. We train about kicking it out of the 22 and then he runs it everywhere. Or even us that play with him, he's so unpredictable. We don't know what he's going to do. He's always on fire and he's so unpredictable. He's a funny guy. He's such a relaxed dude. He's eating M&Ms and dancing like 2 minutes before kickoff. He's just so relaxed and all over the place. But that's his style and that's the way he plays. And he's a great bloke. And yeah, I'm really, really fortunate to play with him. And he's such an attacking fly. It's different to what we had in the past. Obviously, we had Dan Carter, Pat Lamy that I thought was great. But Finn's just got that X factor and it's fun playing with him. And he enjoys challenges so much. Like when he plays against a big fly, you know he's always going to be on. So, yeah.
You mentioned eating M&Ms before the game, though. His warm-up seems to consist of him juggling the balls, doing kick-ups. Are you involved in that with him? Are you doing that?
No, man. Won't go there. He's got some crazy skill. His ball skills and his vision is unbelievable. And he's pretty strong. So we were split up in small groups during preseason training in five players in a group during COVID when we started preseason. And he was in my group. And I was doing 50s or 55s on dumbbells and 200 on deadlifts. And this guy, bloke, he pitches up. Didn't even warm up, nothing. And he just does 50s on dumbbell and deadlifts. And when you look at him, you say, oh, this guy can't pick up 5 kilograms, man. But he's so strong. He's like a natural freak. He's so, so strong.
And he's pretty good after the game, eh? Good on the beers?
That's his best. No, he's a good bloke. He's a good team bloke. Everyone enjoys him. He's such a friendly guy and he's always positive, especially with him and Simon Zebra, having the two of them in the team. I think they're great for the team vibe as well, just getting outside of rugby as well. They're just such a big part of the team.
And just talk to us a little bit about, for people who haven't been there, the La Défense Arena, it's like a spaceship. It's like something, it's like no other rugby ground on the planet. So do you feel a bit like a rock star when you turn up there?
It is pretty cool, especially wintertime when it's 2-3 degrees outside and you get to play inside in 22 degrees every weekend. It's awesome. I know Benji, you played at the previous stadium we had Coulomb. It didn't smell really nice in there.
Horrendous, man. It was the worst.
It's the saddest place. It's the saddest place you could possibly play rugby. It feels like the sun never shines in Colombe. It was just grey everywhere. It's an old Olympic stadium that was built like almost 100 years ago that the French team used to play in before the Parc des Princes, before the Stade de France. Imagine how old that was. And I mean, they used to get 100,000 people almost standing in Colombe, but now nothing's changed since the 1950s. The stands were about to collapse. So there's not a piece of grass a kilometer around. So that did not help, basically.
That was brilliant. I think we actually had a mental advantage playing there because teams hated going there and playing there. But now with a lot of La Défense Arena, it's different. And teams pitch up and it's like I said, the ball's dry, so you get running rugby every week. And I think from a spectator's point of view, it's great for our supporters. Our supporters, our average support has gone up so much since we've been there. Especially because, it's I think there's halftime shows. It's not just rugby, and it's based in a nice area as well. So guys have a Saturday or Sunday outing going there, and it's great for the team playing that conditions every weekend.
You mentioned moving into the second row might prolong your career, and you've obviously still got a load of goals, win the European Cup, hopefully win something with this exciting new French team. So just talk to us about what the future holds for you and how long you think you might go on playing for. You're not that old yet.
No. I just turned 31. So hopefully I would love to play my third World Cup. That's definitely one of my main goals, just to get there. And then I would say I'm done after that season following the World Cup. Then I'd be 34 years old. So that's my main goal, just getting there and taking care of this body. I'm a bit sore after these two games. The recovery takes a bit longer, but I'm still up for it. I still enjoy it. I always told my family as well, the day I don't enjoy it anymore, I'll stop. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying this French team. I'm enjoying the racing team. It's good guys. We've got great team vibes. And I'm just having so much fun at the moment. So I'll definitely push it and push this body as hard as it can go for the next 4 years to try and make that World Cup side in France in 2023.
That's great to hear. And then we've already heard that after that next World Cup, you're going to be Sean Edwards' apprentice for...
Hopefully I can have a few tips, but... Now I've got a few different projects as well that I'm running at the time. So I would like to stay involved in rugby, but on a permanent basis. I would like to do some consulting or amateur clubs or something. I won't go straight into coaching big teams.
And you're settled in France. You're going to stay in France for the long term?
Yeah, I've got some stuff back home as well. We've got a family farm, and I've got some of my investment set up in Paris. So I'll be in between the two, but I've got kids now, so I'll have to make a choice. But I think I'll stay around France. I really enjoy it. I enjoy the culture. I've been here for over a third of my life, so most of my friends and stuff's over here as well. So I think I'll stay in France for as long as possible.
That's great. Well, thanks ever so much for joining us, and a big good luck for the start of the Autumn Nations Cup, and then when you're back with Racing for the European Cup, which is only a few weeks away.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Nice chatting to
you. Cheers, Bernie. Cheers, Bernie.
Go well, Autumn Nations. Come on, win another
appreciate
one.
It.
Good luck. Cheers.
Take care, bud.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Great lad, eh?
Yeah, no, it's really good to see him just being himself, happy, positive, and absolutely crushing it on the field. I mean, his move to the second row was a big one. He didn't like it at first, and now he's enjoying it. At first, every single time a foreigner would make a mistake, you know, you would say, oh, it's a foreigner. Now, look, they've got French passports. Maybe they were born in South Africa, some of them, or in Fiji or whatever. But it's not even a question of do they deserve to be there. So that's that whole unity is there. And I mentioned that jersey ceremony. Honestly, it was a beautiful moment. Like I said to you, Galtier can be a troubled dude and stuff. He opened up like I've never seen him. He picked up that jersey and he started talking about his former home club where his father was the head coach and basically created the home club because in his little village it didn't exist. And he just started crying, got all choked up, and he just like opening himself to 20-year-olds in front of him. He said, I never spoke to it about it and whatever. It was really, really something powerful. And then Big Bernie comes in and then speaks about, you know, his shoe size, and then Vakatawa. I thought he was going to be happy as Larry, a little Fijian born, you know, coming up. And he actually was just like, it's the first time I see the name of my club linked to French rugby. And then he was trying to say something else and he couldn't, and he completely choked. You could tell that he was really, he's like, I'm going to do well. And he sat back down. You know, it's those powerful moments that I was incredibly jealous of not having lived, but I was just so happy to see them finally opening up, finally being themselves. Gaël Ficou had a fantastic chat. Boutier,
he was good as well.
The fullback just rocks up. He's like, boys, 4 years ago, I was playing in National 2. And he's like, well, actually, it's the only title I've got in my life because I won a reserves under 12-a-side rugby regional sort of tournament. And the guy is about to win, is like play sort of a Six Nations final and says, that's my only title. I would love to get another one, please. That was 4 years ago.
He was working as a builder not so long ago, wasn't he, Boutier?
I think he was a maçon. How do you call that?
Bricklayer.
Man, it was just too good. And same as the Greg Aldrich, the big number 8, who's smoking every time, who's had his third man of the match, I think, consecutively or something. 4 years ago, he was playing amateur rugby. So they've got different sort of backgrounds. And then you see Romain Tamac, first club, Stade Toulousain. Okay, so some of us are born differently, but he's killing it. So no, I thought it was brilliant. It was a very great, it was just a great idea.
And linked to that, Fabian has been very good on playing for the fans, hasn't he? The fans can't be there, but we've heard lots about him saying, you guys are playing for the people that can't be here watching us now.
Yeah, and until the end, and after the game on his Twitter account, he said, look, it's been absolutely magical, but it's just the start. Like, we're doing this for you. Don't forget, this is just the start. It's the start of a journey. We've got a young team and it's only going to get better. So it's amazing. Like Benji just touched on, it's an amazing time for French rugby. They've been sort of perennial underachievers for the past 10 years, you'd have to say.
Decades, yeah.
So it's great to see them on a different path, team spirit, a different gear shift, the way they perform on the pitch and everything kind of mixed together. They seem to be driving in a positive direction. So that was really encouraging. And it's what the tournament needs, what French rugby needs, because it's been in the doldrums for 10 years. So that's great. Fantastic to see.
And we spoke to Bernard a little bit about the game against Ireland, but I just want to get your thoughts on the Dupont and Enterback combination. Obviously they tore it up again, but is that the best we've seen from them yet?
I think Entamac was his best performance under the French jersey. So Dupont has done some highs and lows like nobody else has ever done. Not so much lows, but you know, some incredible highlights. So during that game, I think he was as good as most of his performance. Entamac is the first time I've seen him control a game and basically outplay Johnny Sexton in a role which is not completely his. I thought his composure was fantastic. His decision-making was spot on. That little chip kick is just beautiful. Listen, that's the guy who's like, listen, I'm going to take things for me. Beautiful, executed, delivers a try, and you can see he's celebrating. So he's got the skill he always has. He's got the talent for sure. But then he is learning to have the nerves and to have the brains. And I thought that was a hell of a performance, helped by the little crazy tornado Antoine Dupont, helped by Gregor Aldritz, who just is the new Louis Picamol. He just goes forward all the time, and he's been very good. I thought Paul Willemse had a decent game, but Bernard Leroux had another big game. He was just smoking dudes, a workhorse, working very, 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 very hard around the pitch. Gaël Ficou was absolutely phenomenal. And we said about, you know, the fact that he shifted on the wing, but it's still his defensive system was the same. And I thought he did well. And the first ball he catches, he steps the tight head prop for England. Okay, Porter, but still, it's a mismatch. And then he dummies to go, chips it over and gives the try. That was absolutely beautiful. I was so happy for him. I thought they did well. I thought they handled the pressure of, you know, how many points we need to score, yes or no, very, very well. Just great stuff.
I just think generally they seem so much more in control of what they're trying to do in every facet of their game. So like Bernie talked about kick chase. I mean, something stupid that you would never really think about with a French team, but defensively in kick chase, they they put so much pressure on Ireland and Wales that they cracked. You think years past, going back to Ronan O'Gara, Johnny Sexton, you're playing them at Croke Parker in the Six Nations in wet weather, you're going to get bombed, you're going to get good kicking game, you're going to get stressed, you're going to get forced to make mistakes. And what do we see in this game? Little balls through, Jacob Stockdale fumbling the ball leading to a penalty try, high balls. When they recovered France the ball, under little pressure, an offload, and away they go, try time. I just think that's a part of the game that they've never really managed that well. In terms of all the different tries, you can see having worked with Fabian at Montpellier, you can see his fingerprints on everything they do. That's what allows all these guys to flourish. The fact that there is the identification of space with the proper attack system, Ficou gets to control the ball in space, does a one-on-one, first try. The fact that there's a proper communication system in place to identify there's nobody in that second line of defense, we can do a chip kick with Entamac, we can get behind and we can play. All these things before, I've always felt the French team has had the raw ingredients, has had the talent, but they've never had the systems in place properly to communicate and execute at that level. So again, for me, it is next level in where they are. Defense, again, I mean, they had four of the top seven tacklers in the tournament. They had Olivon, they had Aldrit, they had one other, Leroux, we just had him on, and they were phenomenal. They put so much pressure on them.
And one more thing, Johnny, that you would have been very, very aware every time you played Ireland is how good their driving ball was. And I don't know if you remember, but Ireland took a decision beginning of the game to actually cook to the corner, and they got absolutely bullied. And Bernard Leroux was playing that corner. But that's defending your driving ball. If you don't defend it straight as soon as the feet hit the floor, it's very hard. Either you can see the penalty, either you have to do something dodgy because it's just too hard. They just blew them away. And they went from outside in straight into touch. And I think mentally, psychologically, that's a very big thing. And that's William Servat, Karim Ghezal going through the details of, listen, they're going to come and try to bully us on this. We're going to kick them in the mouth from the first one. And I think that's a huge... Instead of adapting to a thing, I think it goes exactly what you said, Johnny, in terms of adding something more in the strategy, in the defensive strategy. That's another weapon that they had to be like, we're not going to concede 10 meters on the first driving ball and then try to see how we're going to do with it. No. We've got a plan in place. We've got all the details already planned in our strategy, in our homework. And then the first line out comes and it was like go time to prove them wrong. So I was very impressed by all that detail.
That was a huge physical marker as well, a mental marker in the physicality in that game. It was the first one. And you know, as a line-out caller, use a thrower, Benji. Anything that you win around 5-7 meters, you know that you're going to get about 600 kilos normally arrive and steamroll you at 45 degrees into touch. That's what happens all the time in top 14, but we don't really see it that much in that attitude at international level. And that's where, again, that marker was unbelievable. It was, you're in Paris, this is our home patch, and we're going to freaking smash you. And I absolutely loved it. It was great. It started well and it went from strength to strength and they were excellent. So an amazing day for the French team and a great tournament.
We spoke quite a lot last week about how we thought the game might pan out. And I think it was fairly accurate. France were too good in the end. We've spoken about...
We're pretty good, eh? You seem surprised, mate. We're very good. You know that.
I know it's going to give you a big head by saying this. But and we've now spoken about Dupont and Entermac and how impressive they were. I just want to touch on Ireland because we spoke quite a lot about them as well last week. So what did you make of Sexton's reaction when he was taken off? Because there's a lot of chat about that at the moment.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a massive contrast between Dupont and Entermac and Murray and Sexton in terms of their age, obviously, and experience.
Yeah.
I know it's a lot to do with the forwards and France got the better of Ireland in that department, clearly. But what did you make of that sort of contrast and then Sexton's reaction?
I don't know what you think, Johnny, but I don't believe he should have been subbed off, considering that... am I wrong to think that the fly half that came in is his number two at Leinster?
Yep, Ross Byrne, yeah.
So clearly he's the number one. Clearly he's the leader of this. Clearly it's going to be a small margin game where you need your biggest strategic asset on the field. So I would have never subbed him off. I did not understand the coaching in general from Ireland. I thought they were quite weird and a little bit poor, but... a guy of his leadership and his experience and his charisma should never even show half of what he showed. Never. Go into the change room, have a proper chat with Farrell if you want. Be angry as you want, because I think that's well-deserved, to be honest. But don't show it. I didn't like the attitude that he showed towards the Irish fans, towards the team spirit and all that.
I'd be more disappointed in him if he walked off with his head down, didn't say anything and sulked off the pitch. I think his reaction, yes, is one of, look, I don't want to be subbed off because I'm the leader of this team and this is my role for this team to win. Keep me on the pitch. But I think half of it is the frustration of how they've played. They haven't been great in this tournament. Obviously, we've talked about PVAC and the Welsh setup. You've got Andy Farrell and the Irish setup. They're clearly in a phase of transition, but they were really average again. So I'm not sure how much of it is the reaction of being pulled off and yanked off for Byrne to come on and try and do something different, and how much is, look, I'm absolutely devastated and I'm showing how angry and upset I am at how we've just performed, because they were average, really, really average. And when we talk about Ireland over the past 10 years, we talk about controlled, measured, sometimes boring, but there, it was error-strewn. They, as a back attack line, they looked like they were just shipping the ball laterally across the field and not really doing anything, and that is not at all what we expect from Ireland. So I don't know. I think Wales and Ireland, we've already talked about it, but they're going to struggle over the next couple of years. And again, Johnny coming off the pitch, for me, and you talked about the coaching and people coming off the pitch, for me it's a roll of the dice from Farrell. He's like, I don't know what's going on, I don't know how to change this game, I have to do something because it's not working. So for me it was almost a little bit desperate, and that's what made me sad. And I thought, yeah, he's devastated with how the game's gone. I thought he was quite right, because I thought they were poor, very, very poor.
And just to finish on the Six Nations, we won't really talk much about the game you mentioned you were doing, Benji. Well, Scotland, not a classic.
It's a classic, mate. It's the first win in I don't know how many years. And I called it. It's an absolute classic.
I was going to say, we were both pretty good about the France Ireland, but I got it wrong for the Wales Scotland. And it was well-deserved, to be fair. A pretty very average game. Very average game, especially in the first half. It opened up in the second, and we saw some positive rugby from the 72nd minute, I think, whereas there's like a 40 sequence phase, which was great, and both sides played well. To be honest, I thought so. Wales are struggling. They're not full of confidence. They're not themselves. They've got a very exciting, that's probably the only good news, a very exciting new back row that Lewis Hughes, I think his last name is, the first cap. Big fella. He looks identical to Dan Lidiot, just a little bit taller. But wow, I think he must have tackled 30 guys in the game, barely made a mistake. He's only 22, I think, or something like that. And it was his first cap, so I was very impressed by him. He didn't show any, you know, newbie coming into the scene and stuff. He was just a workhorse who kept on tackling, never got penalized, and did really, really well. I think Scotland won it psychologically. There's a penalty. They decide to go to touch. They do a driving maul 15 meters out where everybody joins in and score. Fair play to them. They could have taken the points. I think, maybe you tell me wrong, Johnny, but I think that's Stuart Hogg's decision, who then picks up the ball. Like, no, we're going to go to touch. With McInnelly being on the pitch, I think they sort of decided between them. Funnily enough, all the double winners from Exeter, of Champions Cup and Premiership, did not have a huge game, but they just played their role and they played their part. And it was a well-deserved, very well-deserved win from Scotland, with everybody coming off the bench having an impact and doing well. And so I actually liked it. You know, when they didn't let a ref or anybody decide the game for them, they took the ball by the horns, kicked a touch, did that good driver mall, and then it was completely well-deserved. So still a big win, just a bit of a dull moment that you would have loved to have a proper crowd, a proper 40 minutes, and a proper, standing ovation for Alwyn Jones and the record-breaking international caps. It was a bit heartbreaking to see him walking out, and all you could hear was like sort of a slow clap for one dude. But it's better than nothing. Still incredible achievements. It's just a little bit dull.
Well, we're talking about it now, so it wasn't good from a fly half perspective. Finn Russell and Adam Hastings both with injuries, and both going to keep them out for a little while. Finn, I think, his groin is going to keep him out, so that's not great news for Racing either. But Duncan Weir, Johnny,
Meatball, mate, he's a great guy. We came through together at Glasgow Warriors, probably one of the best kicking standoffs I've ever played with. And he's a lovely bloke as well. And he's had to sort of kick his heels and go down and find a club in the Premiership, where he plays really well week in, week out. And he's consistent, which he maybe wasn't a few years ago at Glasgow. He's found a new level of consistency, but he hasn't had an opportunity because Finn and Adam Hastings have been playing so well. So it would be a worry for, I think, most people in Scotland that haven't seen Duncan play, but he's a consistent, nuggety, meatballish Afro head now. I mean, have you seen his hair? It's absolutely amazing, growing for charity. And he'll be great. He'll have built up so much desire watching those two guys play ahead of him. And, you know, he was moved about from Glasgow to Edinburgh, which didn't work well for him. And then had to leave Scotland, move down to Worcester, and he's done it the hard way. So absolutely looking forward to him getting back on a personal level, because I know him and he's a great bloke, but also for the team, he adds something different. He adds a kicking strategy that we don't have. His quality of kicking is world-class. So from maybe people that don't know him too well, they'd be worried, but knowing him, he'll be great. I'm not worried at all. It'd be great to see him back in a Scottish jersey.
And to wrap up on the Six Nations, so great tournament for France. They're getting all the plaudits at the moment. Everyone's saying how they were playing the best rugby in the tournament, but England's title. So pleased for them.
Pleased for England?
Nah.
I think, you know, you can only be pleased for Ben Youngs, who's a top dude, and he got his 100th cap, and hats off. Incredible achievement. Personally, he played really well again. It's just that little detail on that Italy game. Did you see? I saw a video of them, the reaction of them winning it. They just shook hands and that, man. It's random. It is just random. That's not how you want to win it. And when you consider you win it and the team who beat you is second, you'll take a title, obviously, but they didn't over celebrate. It's just a good achievement, good Six Nations for them. Then the title is icing on the cake.
Do you think back to, you know, that loss in France, the fashion that they've won that game against Italy, the manner that they won in Edinburgh in an absolute storm? Like, it hasn't been an overly exciting tournament for them, but I think they'll take the win bonuses and they won't say too much more about it and move on.
So looking ahead to the Autumn Nations Cup, we spoke to Ben Allura about it then. France looks like they're going to play their first choice team against Fiji, and then it'll be the new guys coming in. So just give us a view on how they're going to approach it and what we've got to look forward to.
Yes, Fiji, Scotland and Italy. It will be fun to see sort of the strategy that's going into them. But the deal between the federation and the league was to say a maximum of 3 games. How they're going to handle that, I don't know. They already said that they will try to rotate absolute minimum, and that if they do, it's because they're basically strong-armed by this not ideal situation between the league and the federation.
Yeah, but it's going to be exciting to see who they bring in. But look, they're going to want to finish strong with the group that they've come through with, and then look to rotate further down the line simply. But again, they want to try and do well in front of their French public when they're at home. Again, Benji, I'm not sure if they maybe might rotate more for that game away in Edinburgh against Scotland, just because there's travel and there's top 14 and you might want to be looking for some favours with French president. So I don't know. I think they're going to look to absolutely pummel Fiji in Vannes, which is up in Brittany, in a couple of weeks' time. And then again, they're going to look to try and pump as much as they can, as many new faces into the 23 as possible, and try and give some new caps and get some depth. That's what Ernie was talking about earlier. Generate as much depth as possible before this World Cup.
Well, we will talk more about the Autumn Nations Cup next week. And let's just briefly discuss the top 14 before we leave. Another bad week for Agen.
Another terrible week for Agen, and after that, unfortunately, the coaches got the sack. Christophe Lesuc and Rémi Vaquin did not survive the Monday. They got absolutely trashed by Bordeaux, who needed to win. That's the problem. Bordeaux had a bit of a knife under their throat. You know, they were really, really desperate to win. Some individual behaviors that really did not fit well with the president, who came out on social media saying, listen, it was an absolute disgrace. Some guys are going to get actually financially penalized or something. He just doesn't know. So the coaches got the sack on the Monday, but apparently there still might be some punishment against some players whose attitude he just thought was disrespectful and out of order. So things are not going well at all. Things are dark. And unfortunately, I don't see how they're going to dig themselves out of that hole.
So Benji, they have seven games, no wins. They got 1 point now in the table. They are absolutely battling. You're going to have to bring in a magician with a big wand to fix what is going on at Agen, because the player pool ain't great. They don't have that much talent. Who could you see that's available in French rugby that could come in and do an absolute rock star job and pull them out of where they are right now? Because like they had that week before they played Bordeaux, they ran it was the players that ran all the training sessions. They did it by themselves, no coach, no assistants. Who do we know that's available that could come in that is decent at this stage in a year and turn them around? Is there anybody?
There's no magician around, but they're talking to Regis Son. So a guy's got quite a crazy background, extremely talented back row for Toulouse in the good old days, and then traveled everywhere. He went to coach in West Ireland in a college, and then he ended up coaching Spain. And then he ended up all of a sudden being back in Bordeaux as a forwards coach, and did really, really well. And I got signed back in the Toulouse setup as lineouts and forwards coach. I hear he is an absolute genius. He's very, very good, crazy guy, wears a beret, full of very eccentric, like he speaks about poetry, and then he's a hunter, and then he goes off in the woods. Just a bit of a crazy character. And apparently they're looking at him to come and basically maybe reconnect the guys on the human side more than anything, and then add a bit of science. But like you said, Johnny, it's almost an impossible task, for one. And for two, there's also a possibility that by January, they say, listen, there's no relegation. So because of all the COVID cases and stuff, it's just everything can be pressed on, you know, the whole competition can be pressed on pause. And then you sack your coaches for nothing. So they're just a bit like Farrell was trying to try anything by getting Sexton out of the game, where the president is just trying anything to reboost his team.
And another game in the top 14 we spoke about last week, the derby between Brive and Clermont. Fairly comfortable in the end, Benji.
Huge win. I'm really chuffed for them. Another bonus point that they went to get the 81st minute where they obtained a penalty and then went to touch and then tapped and go and then a few pick and goes, and they steal that bonus point win. They really wanted to then be top of top 14. Which was, it is symbolic. Okay, there's some teams that are missing games under them. Fair enough, but still, it's things are changing. I couldn't be happier. Another captaincy of Arthur Ituria, another full performance of their team. Matsushima really stepping it. JP Barak, a former Sevens international who never really made it into Toulouse, Biarritz, I think he played, and a few different teams, never really made it consistently. Went to the Sevens. back in Clermont, and he's absolutely killing it. He scored a 40-meter try on his own individual effort. His commitment is outstanding. So he's medical joker for Wesley Fofana or George Moala, I can't remember. But they're trying to extend his contract now because he's been so good and influential. The vibe is changing. The team spirit is changing. Look out, Clermont are back. I'm so happy for them.
And a big win. I know Toulouse were missing a lot of players, but big win for Stade Français.
Yeah, to be honest, so I commentated in Paris, and there was Jérôme Cazalbou, who was commentating the Italy, well, that Italy-England from Paris as well. And Jérôme Cazalbou is sort of the manager, let's just say general manager of Stade Toulousain at the moment. He's the link between everyone. And it was easy for him to be in Paris. He's like, yeah, because we're playing Stade Français the next day. I was like, okay, good. Are you looking forward to it? He's like, ooh. So what do you mean? I was like, well, we barely have anybody to put out there. I was like, oh, okay. And he's going through the list of the injured guys. So they already knew that basically they had to sort of not sacrifice, but it was going to be a tough game against Paris because he was telling me about the Max Médard and the Lucas Tauzin and all those guys who were just about to come back in the team, but not to hurt them now and wait 7 weeks to get them. They decided to skip that game to make sure they were fully fit to play next week. So a tough moment for Toulouse at the moment just because of the depth of their squad, which is really shrinking. And it's not going to get any better considering the Dupont and the Entamac and Cyril Bay and Julien Marchand, Aldeguerri now the tight end prop, François Cros who broke his foot at the weekend against Ireland. They're not coming back. So they're going to have to dig deep, stay strong and pray for December to come very quick.
Another big win on the road for La Rochelle, another one we didn't really talk about, but again, a guy that's sort of been in the French team and then disappeared. You'd have played with him, Benji, but can you tell us a little bit about Jules Plisson? He was a guy that I was always quite impressed with, but obviously another guy that paid the price for the fallout at Stade Français, but he's really found his feet and he's doing really well under Ron O'Gara and John O'Gibbs at La Rochelle. Is that a guy that you could see maybe helping to build a bit of depth back in the French squad?
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely charming, loving, lovely guy. He's full of talent, always a positive spirit. He got chopped in four pieces by Courtney Laws and in Twickenham. Yeah. You know, if you remember, I thought he was dead for rugby and he just got back up and went again. So he's a genuinely super nice guy, which Saint-André at some point was thinking of making his starting number one. And they just had a massive fallout with Hannah Kemer and that whole system around Stade Français, where a bit like Sergio Parisse and all that. And he's quite outspoken. He's got quite a strong personality, but he just needs a bit of love, a bit of self-confidence, a bit of this. And then La Rochelle were spot on to actually get him through. And it's funny because he came in as medical joker last year. Or joueur supplémentaire, extra player, whatever, because La Rochelle needed some guy because I think Aya West was injured. First game he comes on, he helps the team to win last minute thanks to a kicking, to one of his kicks. So, you know, it was straight away at the time when there was 20,000 people and Marcel Defrand, La Rochelle, superstar, really good. And the following week, they play against Stade Français. They play in Stade Français, sorry. And he has the winning kick against Stade Français, his old team, that he misses. But after that, he went through performances and performances that basically got him through. So he had the high, the absolute low. Everybody picked him up and then he delivered on the pitch and then it was a sealed deal. Then he re-signed. Then he's bought himself a little boat to go around L'Île de Ré and all that.
No doubt.
He's an absolutely lovely bloke who's trying to get Danty, you know, the very solid center who played for France and Stade Français, to sign for La Rochelle as well, and their best mates and like schoolmates. He's one of that generation of Paris born and bred with the Rabah Slimani and Alex Flancard, Djibril Camara, Hugo Bonneval, all those guys. And he's getting his Fatou Danty back with him in La Rochelle. So a lovely, lovely bloke who just needed a bit of love and he's got a lot of talent. The only problem for the French team is that there's Jalibert and Entamac. So there's a lot of youth, a lot of talent. If there is any a time of a guy missing out, he'll definitely step in there because he's quality.
And he'll be involved in the big game in the top 14 this weekend because La Rochelle and Clermont on Sunday night, that's going to be a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very tough one for La Rochelle. So I think Sunday night at 9 in La Rochelle. Yeah, a very big test for Clermont. I hope it's not too big. La Rochelle is just smoking everyone at the moment. They're not missing anybody, really. They've got Winnie Antonio's back, Jules Plisson, like you said. They're just delivering strong performances. I think the link between Ronaldo Garra and John O'Gibbs took a little bit of time. The acceptance from the team took a little bit of time. Now they're fully on board. They're smoking everybody in the scrum. Dato Zirakashvili, the former Clermont prop, is a scrummaging coach there now. They're doing really, really, really impressive performances. I just hope that Clermont have got enough depth to go there physically fresh and to actually properly give them a run for the money. But it's already, you know, Sébastien Bézier against Kerr Barlow, Matsushima against Arthur Retière if he doesn't play for the French team and stuff like that. So, big, big game.
And anything else you're looking forward to in the top 14 this weekend?
The old Toulouse cast crunch. That's another one that people don't really talk about. It's not the most glamorous of derbies, but for people of Toulouse and Cast, that's a huge weekend. So Cast, again, kind of struggling against Toulouse, who are picking up injuries. So could be a chance to maybe sneak something on the road for Cast. And then again, you can't look past Agen. So Agen are playing at home. If they've got any hope of doing anything, again, they're not going to have a coach there with them this week, but they're playing at home against Lyon. If they're going to be serious and try and mount any kind of challenge of staying up and not getting relegated, if there's non-COVID imposed, they have to win this weekend. Otherwise, they are screwed.
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Benji. And a massive thank you to Bernard Lurie for joining us as well. Thanks to all of you for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe and leave us a nice review if you get a chance as well. And we will be back with another episode next week. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers, fellas.